This episode is brought to you by Windrose Recovery, a family of premier addiction treatment programs in southeastern Wisconsin. Privately owned, Windrose Recovery offers a full continuum of personalized care for those struggling with addiction, including the Manor for residential treatment, Midwest Detox for inpatient detoxification, and Windrose Counseling for outpatient treatment. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantal Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, call Windrose Recovery at 414-409-5300. You can learn more about Windrose Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting WindroseRecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I am Dr. Stevie Pena, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
In the Santa Monica Mountains, Her Escape Vortex offers a unique and truly fantastic setting for your next spiritual retreat. The Lavender Garden, the fire pit overlooking the Topanga Canyon sunset, and the Moroccan-furnished yurt on this magical property provide the atmosphere for an inspiring and transformative experience. A sacred place ideal for yoga and wellness retreats, as well as cleansing and healing ceremony of all kinds, Her Escape Vortex is part of a community of people eager for personal and spiritual growth. Visit thepathtoauthenticity.com/Her Escape Vortex or click on the link in the show notes for more information. If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity, episode 137 for August 17th, 2021, featuring a conversation with Dr. Stevie Pena. And Dr. Pena is a therapist in private practice in Boca Raton, Florida. She's in practice with three other female therapists, all of whom I've interviewed. I released the first of those episodes a few months back, Amy Effman. And I've sat on this one for a while. We talked back in June. And I'm reminded, just going back to edit this, to create this episode, sometimes I sit on the sound for a while and I forget how excited I am to share it with you all. So I think you're going to enjoy this. At the back end of the episode, I do something I'm calling just a thought. And if you've paid attention to this podcast, if you've followed it closely, I've released some supplemental content over the last few months. I've been working on this little separate podcast called Just a Thought, where I do a little monologue and sort of commentary on something. Thought it'd be a fun thing to do. And I probably will end up releasing a season of those. But in the meantime, I'm going to do one of those at the end of each episode. So something to maybe keep you all around to listen all the way through. Or maybe you'll just skip ahead. I don't know. But I hope you enjoy it. Anyway, here you go, Dr. Stevie Pena.
Hey,
I was to ask you what your philosophical orientation is, what would you say about that?
I am existential with my practice. I believe that we define our realities and our own desired outcomes. And when we are true to who we are and what we want, then anxiety and depression decrease and we tend to be happier.
Well, that's what I think. That's kind of what this podcast is all about, really.
I know. I love your authenticity thing. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's what I've learned for me, that if I'm having a hard time, if I'm depressed or anxious, there's something I need to change. Either I'm in the wrong place, in the wrong job, in the wrong relationship, something. To me, that's like how our self teaches us.
Agree. We have ourself, and when we start valuing other people's perspectives or follow their shoulds and it goes against who we are, we lose ourselves and we don't like it.
Yeah. For me, I think about all the times in my life that just ascribing to conventional ideas about what we should do with our lives. There's like this whole script that we have, you know, you get married at a certain age, you have so many kids, you work 40 hours a week, 9 to 5, preferably. And if you deviate from that, something's wrong with you.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I mean, there have been so many times when I've been in jobs and I've thought, man, I'm so hard on myself for just having a hard time getting out of bed in the morning to do it and feeling like there's something wrong with me. And what I've learned is no, not at all. I'm in the wrong place.
Yes. And that's why I went and I got the business psychology degree, because I found that the work environment is where we really discover what we have done for other people, where we followed their other rules and followed other people's expectations. And like you said, I have to work 9 to 5. I have to do these skills because my mom or dad or best friends that I should or shouldn't do it. And we beat ourselves up where we're like, why am I not good at this? Well, probably not the thing for you.
Yeah. So where'd you go to school?
I went to lots of schools. I'm kind of a school collector. I went to USF for undergrad. I spent a little time at the University of Alaska in Anchorage, thinking I wanted to be an anthropologist, but then I studied while I was in the military, went to Wayland Baptist for their business degree, and then I went to Troy University for my psychology master's.
Is that in Alabama?
It is, but they had a campus in Tampa, but the school is in Alabama, yes.
I had a baseball coach in high school who played there.
Oh, yeah?
There's a pitcher there.
My cousin's child plays softball there.
Back then, I think they called it Troy State.
Yep, it was Troy State.
So you're a school collector. Where'd you grow up?
I am from Palm Beach County, but I graduated high school in Nashville. I went to college originally in Pensacola, then Tampa, and then when I was in the military, I was in Alaska. And then came back to Florida.
Nashville. Where did you go to high school in Nashville?
I went to Centennial High School, which was in Franklin.
So you've been all over the place. What made you decide to become a therapist?
Well, when I was in the military, I was an officer in the Air Force, and I would see these young people retiring, and they would lose their professional identity at age 40. And it was, what are they going to do with their transition from this identity to their next one? And that got me interested in like the psychology of transition. And then my first applied counseling job was at a substance abuse treatment facility in Largo, Florida. And the supervisor there kind of took a chance with hiring me. And it was such a great fit. And I learned so much from him. And he was a great supervisor. I learned wonderful skills. And that's where I really got into substance abuse. So it was a transition from an Air Force officer into substance use counseling, actually. And then my career has just kind of grown from there.
Well, I'll tell you, I love all this because as a sober guy, I was able to make a correlation between I don't have a sense of meaning in my life or purpose in my life, and I'm numbing myself with alcohol. And I feel like one of the advantages I've had in my recovery is that there were things I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I had aspirations. And now, being someone who works with a lot of young guys, that's one of the challenges, because the age of onset has lowered so much over the years that so often they haven't developed much of an identity at all. And they don't even know what they like, let alone what they want to do with their lives.
Yes. But we have to choose at 18 what you want to do with the rest of your life.
And then there's all that pressure, which was debilitating for me, and they feel that too.
Of course.
I feel like I get to be the guy I needed when I was their age, who can say, no, you don't have to have all the answers. Just find your people. Do what you want to do, you know?
No, that's great. Yes.
I wish I had. But you know what? The fact that I had the experience I had is what led me to do this, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. So it's awesome. I love that you're doing it this way, and it's such a gift to the people you encounter. So what would you say, first appointment, somebody shows up, what should they expect?
I like to talk to the clients, do a brief phone call before we sit face-to-face with each other, just to make sure that we're feeling each other's, we're connecting, we have a vibe. And then when we sit down, what I find is it's that face-to-face connection that helps the person sitting with me relax and just let it all out. And it's this moment where I, as a client, finally get to tell my story and somebody's listening. And it's this wonderful experience of just sharing and feeling comfortable and knowing that, hey, I am not weird or there's nothing wrong with me. I'm just having these experiences, and now I get to sort through them and do something with them.
You know, we so often we do think there's something wrong with us, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I thought there was something wrong with me because I didn't know what I wanted to do for the rest of my life at 18 years old, which is, if you think about it,
it's ridiculous.
It is. It's completely ridiculous.
Because you're a child. Yes.
Yeah. But we still, so much of our society, they see it all through that lens. And they put so much pressure on their kids to know what they want.
Yes.
I see it a lot. And I don't think there's any coincidence that that's what I see with people who are presenting in substance abuse treatment. I'm sure there are lots of healthy people who don't do that with their kids, but the ones who do, this is what happens.
Yes, because they ask their children, they do it in school. What do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
Okay, so then you're committed to it. And then your parents are like, no, you need to do this. And then they are like, well, we want to set you up for success. So you said you wanted to be an engineer. Well, here are computer classes. And here are the camps that I'm sending you away so that you can be successful in this. Well, what if that was a stage and you're like, well, no, I want to be an artist. Then your parents tell you, oh, well, we spent all this money on these. You should do this.
Right, right. No turning back now, son. You're 11 years old.
Exactly. Yes.
That's so crazy. So tell me about the military. I didn't know you were a veteran. How'd that come about?
Well, I was in between colleges, and I was working in a warehouse, and everyone in the warehouse would ask me, hey, what are you going to do after college? And I would see other college graduates working in this warehouse, and I was like, I don't want to be doing that. So I had heard of somebody who was like, well, you could be an officer after you graduate college. It's just like any other career, you know, you get paid. And I'm like, I think I'll be an officer in the military. And, you know, it was all theoretical. I went to my new college in Tampa, and they had a speaker who was like, hey, you could join ROTC and you get money for college. It doesn't matter what you major in. Why don't you do this? And I was like, well, I don't want to go back home and live with my parents. I don't want to work in a warehouse. So yeah, let's go be an officer in the military. And I joined ROTC. I did not fit in because the first week they were like, okay, so we're going to do exercising at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I asked them, what should you wear? And they said something comfortable. So of course I wore my red sweater, my plaid pants, my pink bandana, and I show up and everyone is in their Navy uniform. So I stuck out from the beginning and nobody thought that I would make it through the whole program, but I did. And then graduated college and then I became a logistics officer in Anchorage. And I did very well. But the ironic part was my job in the Air Force was, of course, to work in a warehouse. But at least I was like, you know, leadership within the warehouse.
You know, my dad was in the Army Air Corps.
Wow.
For those of you who don't know, that's what eventually became the Air Force. And he was stationed up there, I want to say outside of Fairbanks.
Oh, that one. Eielson, yes.
He was like the, ran the mess hall there. And then I just did an episode a couple weeks ago with my mom for Mother's Day.
Oh.
And, you know, he went back home after that, and that's when they met and started to date. And, you know, he was supposed to ship out to Europe right when the war ended. And so we ended up not having to go. Interesting.
That is really interesting.
But, you know, Alaska, he always talked about it like a magical place. He, back then, it was not part of the United States. So what's your vision for your career? You must have something big you're planning.
Of course, always big plans. My vision is to, I believe that we can make a big influence in our society by being nice to each other. So my big focus is to help people, one, appreciate themselves, and then appreciate differences with others. And then that positive perspective of other people will, of course, build kindness and welcome new and positive relationships. And then hopefully that, you know, has a ripple effect and change. That's my overall arching goal. But beyond that, I engage people to help them appreciate others. And that's through organizational work, through my private practice. I also do some psychological research, but it's all focusing on relationship building.
So are you sure you haven't listened to this podcast before? You know, the last thing I say at the end of every episode is be nice. I mean it literally, because I became really intentional about that a few years ago. Having grown up in the Midwest where people are somewhat friendlier, make more eye contact, say hello on the street a little more often, acknowledge each other. Where in South Florida, it's a very transient sort of place, first of all. And there's a lot of, you know, you go into a fast food restaurant, I mean, it's an aberration if the person makes eye contact with you or says anything besides, what can I get you? You know, I mean, it's, it is. And I live in this high rise and I've been here a number of years. And in the beginning, I'd leave for work and come home and like I'd pass these people every day and never say hello or anything like that. And maybe somebody who I met at the pool or whatever, but mostly it just felt really cold. And at one point I thought, I'm not going to live like this. Like, I don't want to live this kind of life. I'm going to say hello to people. If I have an opportunity to help someone, I'm going to help them. And it has made such a huge difference. We get to decide. That's what's important about that. We get to decide.
And you're saying hi to your neighbors or helping somebody else, it sparks something in that person and they will be more likely to do that to others. I mean, we have the scientific support for this, but then, I mean, if you also think, hey, oh, that person was really nice. It puts you in a good mood. You are more likely to be nice to other people.
Right. And then, you know, when it really took off was when I got my dog. Because he is like the sweetest, friendliest dog you will ever meet in your life. And he just goes around, like I've said this before, if he had a voice, he would just be going around going, hey, how are you? What's up? How you doing? You know, like he just goes up to people and I'll walk through the lobby to take him outside. And there's a sofa on each side there. And sometimes if someone's sitting on the sofa waiting for somebody, he'll just jump right in their lap. Yeah, it's funny. But such a great source of love. And just makes everybody smile. It's awesome. Yes. Dogs are great too.
Dogs are very helpful.
So you were telling me you're a mom of three children.
Yes.
What's that like for you?
Really fun. I enjoy watching them become their own people. And I am like a science nerd at heart. And there's that nature nurture debate. And having my kids, I really do see the nature part where they come out with their personalities. And I do my best to, you know, keep them as good people, but they're maturing and growing and becoming their own individual people. And it's such a great thing to sit and be able to watch and be a part of that growth.
Yeah, it's really cool, isn't it?
It is.
The thing that I have come to understand more and more the older I get is that, and there are songs about this, how kids are more wise than we are. I mean, they come out perfect. They know how to be. Mm-hmm. They know how to emote. They know how to connect. They know how to love. And then the world does its number on them. And then if we're lucky enough and become enlightened enough, we realize that there's a lot of stuff that we need to unlearn to get back to where we were in the beginning, right?
Yes, yes.
So that's, I'm sure, something you focus on with your clients too, the unlearning.
One of the questions I usually ask is, hey, what was the earliest you that you remember? What were you like? Mm-hmm. And you were taught that that person's not okay. And going back and knowing, no, that person not only is okay, but that is a beautiful, special person. Let's bring them back out. Let's remember who they are and really celebrate who that person is.
Being a dad, getting to watch that unfold with the person is just really cool. It is.
It is.
One vivid memory I have of my son that I talk about a lot is, you know, we get so caught up in everything we have to do and doing. One day, I walked in the front door and he's sitting on the sofa and he's probably three. And he's happy to see me. He's Dad, come here. And he pats the sofa next to him. Sit. Be with me.
Yes.
Be with me. And it was like, wow, that's all kids want. I've seen it my whole life. It's all I ever wanted as a kid was my parents to be with me. And going back to the substance abuse treatment work, I see so many young guys with father wounds who their dads busted their tails to give them everything. But they were gone all the time, and all their kids wanted was to be with them, and they're heartbroken by the time they find us. And so it was a really good lesson for me as I became a dad. There was no way I was going to do that. I've always chosen him over the job and the time with him over whatever. I think that's a huge message that we convey to our kids that's really important. To let them know they are the most important parts of our lives.
Yes. And that is one of the focuses in my career has been that how do we help addiction? I was working my first job, I spoke of earlier, was adult substance abuse offenders. It was a felony program where you had a substance abuse felony to be in it. And I would see these adult men. It was a male program. And I was like, well, how do we stop people from being here? And I was like, talking to them, I was like, what would have stopped you? They're like, if we were kids. So my next role was working with adolescents and substance abuse. And it was, you know, helping prevent them from being where these adults were. But working with the children, I also saw that, you know, I could talk with them and make them feel good or do whatever I could with them, help them set goals and attain goals. But I'm not their parents. I'm not that love. I'm a temporary figure. It's the parents that have the opportunity to be present and value their children. And it is that connection with your parents. And it can actually begin at any point. Right. Being connected with your children that has the most influence over anything else, and being with your child. And you, your story is not only like sweet that your son did that, but the sweet part is you listened, because our children will tell us, hey, be with me. Mom, come sleep with me. Dad, come look. And we get caught up in our lives that we're like, no, I'm living, I'm doing, I'm busy. And even I get caught up in it too. My children will literally jump in front of my face and force me. And I have to like check myself and be like, wait, I need to be with my kids. They're only going to be this little for a little bit, and then they're going to not want to be around me. So I'm taking advantage of this now and just being. Yeah.
I really love music. And I was going through this phase when he was little where I was finding all these bootleg concert files online and downloading them and burning CDs. And, you know, it was like, I was pretty obsessive about it. And I remember one Saturday sitting at the computer doing that. And I caught myself. I'm like, he's coming for me. He's coming for attention from me. And I'm like brushing him off. And I caught myself, whoa, what are you doing, dude? Like, you don't need another concert. You know, you have 15 of them already. Like, what are you doing? This is your son. Thank God that some of that stuff happened, that I had the awareness to check myself and pivot. I don't know that everybody has the presence of mind to do stuff like that. Maybe I'm wrong, but.
And that is the challenge, because we don't set off to say, I'm going to mess up my kids, or I'm going to make this bad choice and be a selfish person. We don't do that. And it takes a lot of effort for us to be mindful, be present, and not get caught up in everything that's going on around us.
Well, and then you add to that, so many of us have unhealed wounds that we then project onto our kids, and we're trying to heal through them unknowingly. And then that becomes a whole other messy thing. You know, like, I guess the prototypical thing is the dad pushing his son to be an athlete because he wishes he could have been or whatever. But there's a million different ways we can do that, I think. One of the things that I had to learn was I kept telling myself, you know, when he would ask me for something or to do something, I would catch my inner dialogue saying, well, you better not do it this way, because that's how your dad would have done it. And you don't want to do that. And then finally, at one point, talking through this in therapy, having my therapist say, you know, not being them is not the same as you being you.
I'm so glad your therapist said that. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it was a mind blower. You know, I needed to hear it, definitely. But that's where I think the self-love thing comes in, to recognize, you know, my instincts are good. I just have to get back to them. I have to get back to the original instincts that I had as a child that told me how to love, or I just knew, I just did it. It's really interesting. It reminds me, I practiced some yoga, and at one point I wanted to learn some of the spiritual stuff behind it. And I picked up this book. It's called The Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, who was one of the, you know, I don't know, sages from thousands of years ago. And, you know, he has all these principles he teaches. And one of the first ones is, I think he calls it restraint from modification of mind stuff. And what he's talking about is going back to that original thought from when you were pure and not allowing your internal dialogue to convince you to do otherwise. Restraining yourself from modifying your behavior from that. This is the lesson. And if you learn this lesson, you don't need any of the other lessons. That's basically what it said. And it, you know, even as a kid growing up in a Catholic home, and my mom, I had a great mom, and she always talked about how children are innocent and pure, and they really are.
They are.
And wise.
Yes, because they see the truth and then they say it.
Yeah, not afraid of it. Till somebody teaches them they should be.
I know, and that's so sad.
Yeah, but I can only imagine how great a mom you are.
I will tell my kids that.
Yeah, well, thank I mean, just you. The fact that we're talking about this stuff. And of course, I know, being a dad, that it doesn't matter how much of this information or experience that we have. Those things that we said would never come out of our mouths, they come out anyway. Yes. They just do.
Yes, they do.
That's a mind blower. Isn't it? When that happens?
Yes, it is.
Oh my God, what am I doing? Well, how did this happen?
Yep. And those have happened, and I've had those moments, and I'm like, oh, no. And I don't know if this is the right thing to do, and that sounds bad coming from a therapist, but those times that I catch myself, if it's appropriate, I will discuss it with my children. Or at least acknowledge, hey, that was not appropriate. I need to work on that.
Well,
just to air it out and
not do it again. I've done that. You know, we all lose our shit sometimes.
Of course.
What I have tried to do is go back and say, listen, I'm sorry. I, you know, lost my cool. This is what happened with me. This is what came up. This is why I responded the way that I did. It has nothing to do with you. It's me. It's about modeling behavior for him.
Yes.
So many parents, bosses, people in positions of authority just pretend they're perfect. What it teaches our kids is that that's what they're supposed to do too. Pretend they don't make mistakes, pretend they're perfect. And it sets people up for failure and disillusionment and emotional turmoil.
Yes, one of my largest contentions and what I work on, and your podcast is actually perfect for it, is the transparency. People don't like it when you lie. And if you do something wrong, we as people like it when you say, oh, yeah, my bad. Sorry, I messed up. Let me learn from it and move on. And the fastest way to learn something is to mess up. If you mess up, you're going to learn not to do that again. Failure is, it's not a bad thing. And our culture says, oh, no, you're not allowed to fail. You can't do it. And then we fight to say, oh, no, I wasn't wrong. I wasn't wrong. And in doing so, you don't learn, you break the trust around you, and it doesn't actually do anything positive. And when we can admit, oh, wait, my mistake, and I'm going to do something about it, we build trust and we learn and grow.
There was a time when I was running this upscale men's transitional living facility, and pretty small, like 10 or 15 beds, and that was one of the things that I took really seriously, you know. And I remember this client coming into my office one day, and he had gone, this is really funny. he had been in treatment and revealed to me that he slept with the massage therapist that they brought in. Mm. This was a top-notch treatment facility that I had a good relationship with. And I'm like, I called him up and said, hey, just so you know, here's what's going on. Well, they stayed in touch. So, you know, he didn't tell a bunch of people. He told me, right? So then, thank God, I one of the other guys telegraphed it for me. That, hey, so-and-so's really mad at you. He's going to be coming to talk to you about this massage therapist thing. So I was ready for it. But when he came to me, I was like, man, I can't believe you did that. You know, really mad. And I said, you know what? I could have handled that better. I should have talked to you first. And he, like, just his energy completely changed. And it was to where he was really defensive and posturing. He was like, whoa, he's not going to be a dick about this. And, you know, it was a pivotal moment in our relationship. And what's really cool about that is I hadn't seen this guy for years and years. And somebody asked me to speak at a 12-step meeting a couple years ago. And there he was, like 13 years. Yeah. Those little things that we do make a difference. They do.
Yes.
And we all make mistakes. And eventually I left that job because the person I worked for was incapable of doing that. And so we had to pretend that even when she was wrong, she was right. And I'd watch the other people who challenged that, and they didn't stick around very long. You know?
Yeah.
That's how the dysfunction works. You know, when you're really in it and people challenge it, they eliminate you to maintain it.
Yes. And it's interesting, though, because we as humans, when somebody questions us or challenges us, our natural desire is to fight back because we don't have bears attacking us, but words are threatening. So it's kind of human for us to be like, no, and fight to the death to prove whatever it is. But it doesn't, it never ends up being a positive experience in the end. So it's like fighting our natural human instinct to defend ourselves and just being like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And the honesty thing is probably the first real lesson I learned in sobriety, because I got to treatment and, like, day one had an opportunity to tell my story to the community and did it. And I knew there was stuff I left out the last time. I knew I had to come completely clean. And there were things I was ashamed of that I didn't want to tell people. I was afraid I'd be rejected. But I made myself do it. I did it anyway. And it was like I was just showered in love because of that. They just enveloped me and praised me and thanked me for being so real. And it was such a huge lesson to get as a young man that when we're willing to be real, people respond to that. That's how we actually connect with people. We don't do it by being fake. One of the things I've been thinking about lately is vulnerability has become such a buzzword now. It's used all the time about how we need to be vulnerable. What we're really talking about is being real. That's what we're talking about.
Yes.
Is having the courage to tell the truth, our truth. That's what it is. And I hope we get to a point where where the word vulnerability, what it implies is that being real, it's taking a risk. And it shouldn't be.
Yes.
It shouldn't feel like taking a risk to be real.
No. Because if you talk to people, you ask them, like, what is the one thing that bothers you if somebody does? They're always going to say, when people lie to me. I don't want people to lie to me. But being fake, isn't that just lying?
Well, and to be honest, part of the inspiration for this podcast was, you know, I'd gone through this situation with another person who was super fake with me and hurt me. And I was like, how do I make sure people like that don't fit here? It was toxic. And so that's, yeah, I mean, having a podcast about personal authenticity, I mean, it kind of requires that you steer away from fake people talking bullshit. You know, I mean, it just doesn't work.
Yes. And I love that. And I wish everybody could incorporate that mentality where you had a situation and you're like, I don't like this, so I'm going to do something about it. What can I do? And then you creatively solve. Whereas if that didn't motivate you, and we can get stuck in, oh, that person was fake, what did I do wrong? Or they're a bad person and they should change, which when we focus on the other person, we're not doing anything. But you looked at it, you're like, well, what can I do? What is within my power? Okay, right. Let's do that. That's amazing.
Thank you. We create our experience, right?
We do.
And part of that was not honoring myself in the first place, because there were a lot of things that led up to that. Things that I accepted that I would never accept again. Just basic standards for human interaction. I call you, you call me back, like that kind of that kind of stuff. And but now I was still at a point where I was coming from a place of need. And that was a relationship that I worked through with a therapist, which I think if we're talking about people getting therapy, that's one of the things that I've done over the years, that if there's a, especially a romantic relationship that is important to me, let me walk all the way through this with a therapist. And my first real significant relationship in sobriety, I mean, from the moment where, okay, I'm interested in her, how do I approach her? From beginning until it came time to, okay, I need to walk away, I went through it with a therapist. And I think a lot of times people are resistant to therapy because they think it's like not going to go anywhere. And so what ends up happening is people usually seek out that kind of support when they're in crisis. And to me, it's like, it's help. Why wouldn't I want it? Like, why wouldn't I want somebody to help me do stuff that I don't know how to do effectively? And so I'll encourage people to go with an agenda, have some goals, tell them what you want to get from this experience. It's yours. You get to do that. Thoughts on that?
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. And that is what I tell people. We pay stylists to style our clothes. We go to experts for expert marketing. And we seek people who are talented in areas that we might not. Why not seek an expert to, hey, you know, I want to be successful in my relationships. This person is an expert in helping people establish relationships. That's great. Let's build the skills.
Yeah.
Like I compare counseling with going to the gym and having a personal trainer, where if you want to go, sure, you know the machines and you know how it works, but we always work out better when we have that personal trainer sitting there motivating us and really educating how all of the machines do help and how that interplays with our bodies and the way it works. And we are going to work harder if somebody is sitting there helping us work harder. Counselor or therapist, they're not you. The trainer's not working out for you. You're still the master of your own body. They don't know more about you than you know, but they can help you develop the skills that you want.
So we pay stylists to tell us how to dress?
I do. Yes, you do? I can't do it on my own.
Oh my gosh. That's one of my life goals. I feel like I have good style already, but
it's helpful. Yes. And it could be like a teenager, because, you know, they always have the latest information on anything.
Yeah. My son, a while back, I was I actually, I just shaved my beard completely a couple days ago for the first time since 2017. And I never thought I'd have a beard. I started growing it and I got a really positive response with it. So I stuck with it and I'll play with it. You know, I'll keep it really short or sometimes I'll let it grow out. And at one point, somebody pointed out the difference between when it's longer and when it's shorter, but didn't characterize it, but implied there was a difference.
Oh.
And I said to Jack, I said, do I look better with my beard long or short? And he said, long. I'm like, why the hell have you not told me this? It's like, I don't know. But it's funny. Other people can give us that kind of feedback that it's kids, though. They do. They see things that we don't.
Yes.
It's funny. I do this group with adolescent and young adult males, and I'll come in there with a different pair of sneakers on or something. They'll be like, those are dope. Those are sick.
You know you did it right.
Those
yes.
are sick. That's what they say. Those are sick. Which I can never bring myself to use either of those words to denote something positive. It just doesn't, I can't even fathom it.
Correct.
Yeah. So are you going to write a book?
That is one of the goals. Yes.
Okay. All right. You got a timeline for that?
It's a collaboration with this behavioral economist. Behavioral economics is it's basically our behavior without logic and just how we act without thinking and basic responses. And it's working with him and adding how behavioral economics influences or can influence familial relationships, especially like couples.
Hmm.
So that would be in the next couple years.
Well, I feel like you and I need to collaborate on something.
That would be awesome. I would love it.
Will you think about that? What that might be?
Yes, I love writing and I have a few articles out there on various topics.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I mean, if you have anything that I could post on the podcast blog, I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah.
So anything you have that you just want to send me, because it's just so aligned, it's congruent with everything I'm talking about. Do you know about this app Clubhouse?
I've heard of it. I do not know it.
Well, it's somewhere where I've been spending some time recently, and I feel like it really lends itself to podcasting because it's an audio sort of app. Imagine it being one enormous conference that addresses just about any topic you can imagine. And there are all these different rooms you can go into that are on different topics. So I did one on Wednesday with a woman who's going to be on the podcast soon. She is an executive relationship coach in the UK. And we did a room on how men respond in relationships with powerful women.
Oh, that's a good topic. I'm going to have to refer to that one.
She's got a big following, and I'd been to a couple of her rooms, and she and I'd connected, and I said to her after one of the last ones, "What, you should talk about this." And she's like, "Okay, let's do it. We'll do it together." And the next week we did it, and it was gold. It was so cool. And I don't know, maybe like 75 people were there.
That's
something like that.
Awesome.
Basically how it works, and there are variations of it, but there are moderators, right?
Yeah.
Who kind of run the room, and the room that has a stage where only if you're on stage do you have access to a microphone, and the moderators determine whether you have you can be on stage or not. So you can ask to go on stage or you can be invited, but a moderator has to let you up. And then usually the way they do it is the moderators will kind of set the stage and then periodically throughout the discussion, do that again, which they call resetting the room so that anybody who comes in the middle of it will know. And then they go usually down the line, whoever's on stage in the order that they came up, and let people comment or question or whatever. what are your thoughts on this? And, you know, it depends on how it's moderated. If it's moderated well, it's really good. If it's not, then it's crazy, kind of.
I can imagine.
I learned about it. I was invited by another guest of the podcast. And then when I got on there, I started connecting with other guests. And then one of them, who's a therapist in Manhattan, was a moderator in this room. It's a room called One Thing, and it happens 4 times a week. What's the one thing you do for self-care? Mm-hmm. What's the one trait that you admire most in people? They ask you to be concise, but everybody who comes up on stage tells them what their one thing is. And so anyway, she's like a lot of therapists. She works too much, right? And it's Easter Sunday.
Oh.
And I get a push notification that joined Gina in the one thing room. And I text her. I'm like, what the hell are you doing on Clubhouse at 8 o'clock on Easter Sunday?
Wow.
And she invited me up on stage. That's what she did. So then I, you know, it was about what's the one thing you fear most or something like that. And so that was the first time I spoke, and then people started following me, and then I started going into their rooms, and the next thing you know, I have about 340 followers. The people who are getting traction in there is when they get around 1500.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some people who have, I mean, the really big ones have millions.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you get into the tens of thousands, that's a ton.
Yeah.
But anyway, the reason I bring this up is because we could do a talk on there about what we're talking about authenticity.
I would love it. It's one of my favorite topics.
Yeah. And about its role in the healing process. And through your lens of what you do and the training that you have. And I just think it would be really, really cool.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, we definitely have to do something. So maybe that's a good place to start. Okay, so looking back on Stevie's life, when is the one time when you needed a word of support or encouragement? When would that have been, and what would you go back and say to her?
When I was 15, my dad decided he wanted to go write country music. So he left us and moved to Nashville. And it obviously left me brokenhearted. And I think that was like the moment that I began to know that I wasn't, that there was something wrong with me, and that I wasn't good enough for worth loving or caring or even being considered in anything. And I would go to that person, and with my current viewpoint, I'd be like, no, they're all wrong. Be you, and you are going to be fine. More than fine. You are going to be amazing. Other people don't define you.
Authenticity proudly supports the iSpeak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit iSpeakMedia.org. All right, there you have it. Dr. Stevie Pena. She's fantastic. So, just a thought on cynicism. Cynicism is defined as an inclination to believe people are wholly motivated by self-interest. Cynicism is something I've come to learn that I'm relatively sensitive to. I see it. And I don't like it. I see it as it relates to politics. Every politician's a crook. They all lie. How many times have you heard that? I think of it in terms of love and marriage. All the guys out there who will tell you life is over once you marry. All women are this way, or all men are that way. Cynicism. And especially as it relates to politics, I feel like it's just an excuse to not do anything. An excuse to be indifferent. An excuse for ourselves to not care. And what it really boils down to me, why it's personal to me, is because I've always felt like it's really important to not allow one's heart to be hardened, to remain open, to have hope, to believe in people. I'd rather be the type of person who believes in someone else than the type of person who doesn't. And the good news is, this is all a choice. We get to create our own experience. So, just a thought. Choose hope over skepticism. Choose to believe in someone rather than to not. I want to thank the show's sponsors, The Manor and Windrose Recovery, Her Escape Vortex, and The Path to Authenticity is proud to support the I Speak Media Foundation. Thank you to the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. Check them out. You can find them on Spotify. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, especially, or Podchaser, wherever you listen, whatever they let you do, whether it's follow, like, review, rate, whatever, please do it. Every little bit helps. And if you know someone who would enjoy this episode, please forward it to them. So this has been great. This just a thought thing is something I've been working on for a while, and I thought maybe it'd be a good way to kind of close the loop on the back end of the episodes, have something constructive to do with that time, give people a reason to stick around. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you guys for listening. I appreciate you investing your time in this show and in me. Hope you keep coming back. Be nice.
Hey, we need a guitar player.
This episode was brought to you by Equivox. For digital marketing or web design services, visit Equivox.com.